Hey everybody, and welcome back to the 21CD podcast, where we ask the hard questions, discuss the dystopian, and analyze alternative theories. I'm your host, John. Whether or not you're here for the first time, please consider liking, subscribing, commenting, or leaving 5 stars, depending on which platform you're on. This helps me break through the algorithm and defeat our AI overlords. There's a couple quick things I want to go over right before we get into it. I'm going to keep it brief because I want this intro stuff to start being much shorter than I traditionally have had it. But one, we're pretty much on every relevant podcast platform now, except maybe Apple. There's some kind of technical difficulties that we're having with Apple right now that I am attempting to get fixed. So if you're not finding us on Apple Podcasts, don't worry. We'll be up there soon. The second thing is, last week I was on the Confessionals podcast, hosted by Tony Merkel last week. We were over there recording an interview, and it was a 6-hour long conversation. It was a really good conversation, and we ended up discussing everything. From elves to portals to some things that I've seen in the woods, and pretty much everything in between. So consider heading over to the Confessionals podcast and listening to that awesome interview, and maybe even become a member so you can access the members-only portion of that conversation, which was just epic. And last but not least, if you've been noticing some changes around 21CD Studios, it's because I'm constantly changing this thing. It's a brand new podcast, so I'm still trying to figure out all the what I want the aesthetics to be like and whatnot. So we are going through some changes here and there, but rest assured, soon I'll have it all nailed down. It just takes me time to figure this stuff out, so I'm constantly upgrading my gear and changing the look of some things. I'm going to slim down the intro in the coming weeks, so once again, we can get straight to the story much faster and get you guys entertained as quickly as possible. I know you need that fix. So that's it. Let's get right into it. So today, I'm going to be discussing a personal experience of mine regarding potential portal exposure, a concept that I call the bleed, which has to do with dimensions colliding, and my experience in an abandoned building in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I experienced all sorts of bizarre and unexplainable things. So it's going to be a fun episode. Buckle up for the ride. And prepare to be absolutely amazed. And just remember that if you do not subscribe to this podcast, you will regret it for the rest of your life, because you may end up missing other episodes that are just as awesome as this one. All right. And here's a little disclaimer that I got to get off my chest right now, because this story, this is going to be only the second time that I have actually really told this story in completion all the way through. It's a bizarre story. I cannot explain what happens to me and my brother in this story. It is crazy. And because I can't explain it, I do try to formulate ideas that sort of go along with what I believe spiritually is going on in the world today. But you guys have to understand that this is definitely a high strangeness story. And there are some details of the story that are pretty out there. And you just got to go, you got to take it and just know that I'm not lying to you guys. You got to trust me on this one. And just, you know, we all have strange experiences in our lives, and a lot of people are afraid to talk about their strange experiences because they are afraid that it makes them look weird, makes them feel like people are going to think they're strange, people are going to think they're not credible, and it's going to ruin their reputation, or their friends are going to look at them sideways. Strangers are not going to want to be anywhere near them. And, you know, I went through that too when I first discussed this story, and I'm still trying to get out of that feeling. But I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. So if I struggle during telling this story, first of all, there's a lot of layers and details. And also, it's just kind of hard for me to talk about this sort of strange situation that I found myself in Milwaukee. All right, guys. So let's get this puppy kicked off. Let's just get straight into it. I had recently, at the beginning of this tale, I had recently come back from Ecuador, where I had been living for a little while. And when I would come back from Ecuador, I would go home to Wisconsin, where my parents live. And, you know, I would sort of crash with them until I got my feet on the ground, and then I'd work for a little while, 6 or 7 months, and then I would go back to Ecuador. And this was one of the situations where I had just returned from Ecuador. I was crashing at my parents' house up in the woods in Wisconsin. And I was, my brother was living in Milwaukee. So I was thinking, you know, I'm going to go visit him, hang out with him. We're going to get into some shenanigans. And that's exactly what happened. So I got in my Jeep and I drove down to Milwaukee to see my brother, and we just hung out for a couple days, and on one of these days we decided that we were going to go urbexing. We're both photographers, so we were going to go and find some cool abandoned building in Milwaukee and take some awesome pictures and just generally try to have a good time in that city, which is not always easy. So we were driving around town, and there's this part of Milwaukee called the Fifth Ward. And if anybody's familiar with the city, they know exactly what I'm talking about. The Fifth Ward is sort of this antique industrial area, which has been converted into upscale apartments, and sort of like the indie crowd hangs out there. The Milwaukee Market is there, which is where you can get all sorts of like craft beers and cheeses and good food and fish and hear some live music. And there's like a lighthouse nearby because it's on the lake. And this really cool place where most of the buildings are giant red brick buildings and a very late 1800s industrial vibe. So naturally, we figured this is going to be a great place to find a building that we can realistically enter without being caught, because there's a lot of buildings that aren't being used down there. So we're driving around, and, you know, we found a few, and some of them had crackheads in them, and some of them just weren't that interesting. Some of them we couldn't get into because all the windows were boarded up or what have you. And we eventually stumbled across this one that was sort of in one of the corners of a four-way intersection. But this intersection was not being heavily used. Like I said, this is kind of an abandoned industrial park area. So this particular little area wasn't being very heavily utilized at this time. And we broke into a number of buildings. I say break into, but we never broke anything. We just entered a number of the buildings in this area. So we, previous to this, so we had known that this area was going to have some cool industrial buildings here that we could probably get into. So we found this one, and for my safety, I'm not going to say exactly which building it is. It's very easy to narrow down what building it is if I give the name of the building. It does have a name, and as with a lot of these buildings, most of these places have been bought up by billionaires and millionaires and real estate companies to eventually turn into upscale apartment buildings. So they're all kind of owned by somebody, but a lot of times before the project can really come to fruition, the owner will run out of money for developing a project of this scale. And this building was one such building. It was a building that had been purchased by some billionaire real estate company, and they were going to turn it into upscale apartments, and they had run out of money, and therefore it just sits dormant. So that's the background of this story. It's a giant building, red brick building. I don't know how many stories, and as I continue telling this tale, you'll see that I really have no idea how many stories were in this thing. And it's sitting adjacent. It's a big square building. It's sitting adjacent to another brick square building, and there's like a 10-foot-ish space in between these two buildings. And so my brother and I were sort of walking along the road, looking at it. We're looking for no trespassing signs. It's got a construction fence all the way around it, but there's no sign that anybody's currently working on it or has worked on it recently. The fence has sort of fallen over and is laying on the ground. There might have been a construction dumpster there, but there were no tools or tractors or trucks or anything like that that gave us the hint that somebody's working on this currently. So because we didn't see any of that stuff, we were kind of like, well, this is a good building. The lower windows and doors on the building were all boarded up, but we could see that a couple stories above these boarded up windows, there were no more there were no more boards on the windows. So all the windows up above the first couple stories were open. Like the glass, you could see through it and everything. So we knew that there was light up there, which was going to be essential for us because obviously we were trying to take pictures and you need light for that. And it also makes it easier to see if you have light and windows that aren't obstructed by plywood. So we had charged our phones. We each had our phone, and we each had our Sony cameras, A7 III's, and my brother had brought one battery pack. We had charged everything up. We were going to make a little day of this, and now we had found our building. So after we had finished sort of going around the whole thing, looking for cameras, looking for anybody who might be on the property, no trespassing signs, all that, and just not really finding anything that was telling us to not enter, we rushed towards the building, and we sort of went in between the two buildings because there we couldn't be seen by the road, and it provided the most cover from anybody who may be watching this area. And in between the two buildings, on the building that we were going to enter, there was a loading dock, and this appeared to be the best place to enter. And for those of you who are wondering, well, if there were only 10 feet in between the two buildings, why is there a loading dock here? My idea on this is that probably the building we were about to go in was older than the adjacent building. And at one point, trucks were able to park back into this loading dock and sort of unload their goods or load up their goods. And so that's sort of my explanation for that. On this loading dock was a big garage door almost, and it was the kind where you would pull up on the metal handles and it would sort of go on the track and fold. And it was a big wooden door. So we climbed up onto the dock, and with all our might, we pulled this thing open. And we were only able to get it about 3 feet up before it jammed on something, and we couldn't actually open it any further. So right inside the door, there was conveniently this fire extinguisher. It was like an antique sort of silver fire extinguisher. I reached in, I grabbed that thing, and I put it underneath the door, and we sort of gently set the door down on it so that it was resting on the fire extinguisher so the door wouldn't shut on us. Naturally, one of my biggest fears when urbexing is that you're going to get stuck in a place. You never want to get stuck in a building. It's much cooler to not be able to get in the building in the first place than it is to actually be stuck in the thing. So, yeah, we ended up getting in and securing our entry. And the first couple levels were pretty mundane, pretty basic. As I said before, these lower levels were all boarded up, so it was really dark in there. We only had our phones for flashlights, and there wasn't much to report. There was a bunch of interior rooms had been built into the building. Clearly, it was used for office spaces or something like that. And I say clearly because there was like old desks here and some papers, like just your generic abandoned building, sort of forgotten stuff. And my idea is that probably after this building had been a factory or some kind of cold storage place or something like that, it had probably, the lower levels had probably been converted into spaces where different type of work could go on by maybe a different company that had purchased the building or whatever the case may be. So there were all these interior rooms on these first few levels that we sort of just skirted on through. We wanted to get to the upper level. So the staircase to this place, when you're on the first level and you go in, it's sort of like you have to go across the whole building. You enter on one side and you've got to go across the whole building to get to the other, one of the other front corners of the building. And it appeared that the staircase, that was the only staircase that we could literally find. So I had always I've been in buildings like this before, and staircases were often like in the middle of the floors, in the middle of the, some room or something so that you could go up through the middle of the building. But in this particular building, it appeared that the staircases were only on those corner, on that corner, that front corner. And the staircase was sort of like a spiral staircase. It would go up something like 9 to 12 steps, and then there would be a landing cutting over, and then it would go up 9 or 12 more steps. Really tall ceilings. I'm not an architect or an engineer or anything, so I'm not exactly sure how tall the ceilings are, but I would definitely say probably 18 feet or more. And when we found the staircase on the first level, this is important for later in the story, there was absolutely no way to go down anywhere. So what I mean by that is there was no basement that we could see. You could only go up from the first level. And so that's exactly what we did. We went up a couple levels, and we ended up getting to the floors where there were no boards on the windows, and we had plenty of light to see. And I believe it was the fourth floor was the first floor that didn't have windows. And so we were taking pictures. It was really cool. And all the interior rooms were no longer a thing. At this point, the fourth floor was an open space. It was like a giant, just a giant open floor plan with red brick walls, really thick red brick walls, which ended up not allowing us to have signal in this building. At least that's what I believe. Neither of us were able to really use our phones for communications because we didn't get signal in here. And later in this story, I might try to surmise that maybe there was some kind of signal jamming going on in this building, but that's really up for, that's anybody's guess, really. I mean, maybe it was that, maybe it wasn't. But either way, we had no signal. And these floors that we were now on were giant open floor plan buildings with concrete floors, concrete ceilings, red brick walls, huge windows, glass windows. None of them were broken. They had like the metal pane dividers in them. Really beautiful building, and pillars in the building, beams like railroad track style beams that would hold the ceiling up for support. And the floors had all been swept. It was spotless from here on out. Every single floor above the third, so like the fourth floor and up, were very clean. There wasn't trash in here anymore. There was no piles of dirt or debris or leftover furniture. There was nothing. It was beautiful, and there was a thin layer of dust across the floor. So we knew that it probably hadn't been touched for a little while, but whoever had last been in here had really cleaned the place up nicely. And there was, like, you could see the dust on the air, on the light that was coming through the windows. And so we were able to get some really cool photos. And after we would be done on a floor, we would go up another level in hopes of, you know, doing what you do and hopefully getting to the roof and then seeing the view and then leaving. That's kind of the game plan. We've explored all sorts of buildings, including silos out in the middle of the country, and the goal is always get to the top. So that was kind of what we were aiming for here as well. So we go back to the staircase. This one staircase seems to be the only staircase that we ever find, which in hindsight is bizarre, I will admit. They're usually, and especially in a building this huge, there usually are more than one way. There usually is more than one way in or out. But, you know, as we said, the staircase is in the corner, and I'm looking out, and you can kind of see the whole floor laid out before you on this open floor plan, and we never saw another staircase. Like, it's not like you could look over in the opposite corner and there's a staircase over there as well. There, it seemed like this was the only one. And that doesn't really make sense. I understand that. That's kind of the first part of this story. That makes zero sense. But I'm just relaying what I saw. So anyway, we end up going up to the next floor, which, if I remember correctly, was the fifth floor. And on the fifth floor, stuff starts to get kind of weird. Immediately as we're going up the stairs, I sort of am looking up as we're going up the stairs, as you do when you're going up stairs. And I noticed that one of the windows in the stairwell is casting light through, obviously. But it seems like above the doorway is a strange amount of shimmering. That's how I can describe it. It's the best way that I feel like I can describe it. It's as if you were to take a spray nozzle that you would put on your hose and put it on the mist setting, sort of spray it into the air, and just like you kind of see the rainbow and the sort of holographic kind of colors. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. And it probably looked less magical than you're imagining in your head. And it could have been dust. I don't know. But it did seem like there was a strange sort of fairy mist, is how I'm going to call it, above this door and sort of falling down over the door itself. I don't know what it is. Disclaimer, this is what I call the portal. But when I first saw it, I didn't think of it as a portal. I didn't really register it at all. I just thought it was cool looking. Like, I didn't really, maybe it was dust or something like that. I don't know. But we walk through onto the floor, and immediately we start to notice that this floor is different than the other ones. There's a single chair in the middle of the floor, and it's a red chair. And if you can dig into the recesses of your memory and try to remember those kind of like school chairs that you would find in gymnasiums sometimes, with the silver legs and sort of the one piece of plastic that is what you sit on, and then it scoops up to become the back of the chair as well. That's what it looked like. It was that red chair that, I don't know, I can picture it perfectly, but hopefully you guys can too. And the next thing we noticed were these large red doors on the wall that we were coming out of the stairwell. They were bomb shelter doors, like fallout shelter doors. If you guys have ever seen like Cold War era fallout shelters, they're these huge doors that look like they could be the entrance to a fortress. And as we climbed up each level, it seemed like every other level had a set of these doors in the wall. And some of them were open, and some of them were closed and locked, and there was no way in them. And on this level that we were currently on, the doors were open, and there was nothing inside. But the doors themselves were staggering and huge, and I remember thinking how strange it was that there are fallout shelters on these upper levels, because I would want to go to the bottom of the building to seek shelter in the case of like air raids or fallouts. I wouldn't want to be on these upper levels, but regardless, I'm not sure why it was done that way, but that's the way it was done in this building. And the third thing that we noticed was a ceiling fan that had obviously been installed and was on. The power was running to it. There was a light switch right next to the doorway we were in. I flipped it. I heard the current cut. I knew that it was powering this fan. I've turned it back on so to leave everything as I found it. And sure, I mean, that's what it was. So you have red chair, doors, ceiling fan, powered on. And the most alarming thing to us was the ceiling fan, because now we knew that there was power in this building. And furthermore, something was left on, which is typically indicative of somebody being present. But we figured, you know, there's been a lot of work in this building, clearly, and I think the city requires power to be running to a property for it to not be considered an abandoned property. So it's very possible that whoever owned the property was just letting the electricity bill continue to be paid every month in order for the city to not claim the property as abandoned. And whoever had been here working and cleaning everything up had installed the fan for circulation on the floor and just left it on, assuming they'd be back the next day, and never came back. Or they just forgot about it. It really isn't that big of a deal, because we have been in buildings before where there was electricity and nobody present. Just because power is going to the building does not mean that it's being used per se. It just means that there's power going to the building. When you're a millionaire, I imagine that something like that is sort of just a recurring bill on your, you know, coming out, a payment coming out of your bank account that you barely even notice. And so that's kind of what we chalked it up to be, and we didn't really think much more about it. We did proceed with a little bit more caution. We figured we had to, just because, you know, in case somebody was in here, we wanted to be prepared for the situation that we encounter another human in this building. And it didn't take us much work to get in here, so it's maybe somebody else had the same idea. And in the past, we have also encountered other explorers in buildings, and it's always just sort of the semi-awkward situation where you just have to be like, hey, we're in here too. We're not going to hurt anybody. We're not here for any shenanigans. We're just hanging out. You do your thing, we'll do ours, and we'll leave each other alone. And that's usually the way it goes. So we were just getting ready for the situation that we bump into somebody that who is, you know, urbexing here. We go up to the next level. This, according to my memory, this is the sixth floor. And there's no markings on the walls to say what floor you're on. That's another thing that I always thought was kind of strange about this building, is none of the floors are labeled. So this is, when I say what floor it is, it's basically based on my memory from counting as we're ascending. I may be wrong. And the reason that I point that out is because a lot of people attach numbers to symbolic meanings. And I want to make it expressly clear that I am remembering it this way. I had at that time no proof of what floor we were on except the fact that I was trying to count them as we go up. So there's your disclaimer. But we get to the sixth floor, and like the red chair on the previous floor, there is a gigantic wooden machine in the middle of the floor. And it looks like a huge pinball machine. It's got the big headboard. It's a dark wood. And, I mean, it's like the size of a small school bus. Like, it's huge. And it has these sort of belts in a frame coming off of the headboard at an angle. And we did some research, and it seemed like it was some kind of grain processing machine. And there's not much to really say about it. We thought it was staggering. It was clearly antique. We take out our cameras to take pictures of it, and lo and behold, both of our cameras are dead. We have been exploring before in a wide variety of locations, and it's sometimes, yes, we get so wrapped up in what we're doing that we leave our camera on accidentally or something, and then we look at it and, oh man, I was at, you know, 70%, but now I'm at 5% because I left my camera on or something like that. But we had charged all of these devices around 12:30, which at this point was only like a couple hours ago. And we had powered them off and also hadn't been using them that much. It was extremely alarming when we took out our cameras to take photos of this thing, and both of them were dead. It made no sense whatsoever. When we looked at our phones, mine was at about 20%, and my brother's was at about 25%, and he was trying to get his battery pack to charge his phone, and his battery pack wasn't working either. It had also just been completely smoked. So now we're getting kind of concerned, obviously, because our devices have all been effectively, you know, they're all kind of dead at this point. Like, we have to now, we can't take pictures. we can't take pictures with our phone because we need to conserve the battery for when we try to go back down, and we'll need to use them for flashlights for the bottom three levels so that we can find our way out of this thing, because all those levels are boarded up, if you guys remember. So we're kind of getting to the point where we are like, okay, like now this adventure has changed a little bit. This isn't really a photography thing anymore. Now we're kind of just exploring, and we have to conserve our batteries, which is never fun. When you're in sort of an unknown area, an unknown situation, and your gear fails, that is the worst. So we're getting a little, we're a little bit on edge now. We're kind of disappointed. We can't take any more pictures. We're not getting signal. It's not like we could call for help if we needed to. And we're kind of high up in this building. Like, we kind of figure we're halfway up this building at this point. And there's power in the building. Somebody could be in here. All of these things are kind of adding up to just make us kind of on edge. And I'm still not thinking about the shimmer above the door, to be clear. I didn't start thinking about the shimmer above the door until after we left the building. That wasn't really factoring into my brain. And the reason I'm telling you that is because I still want to reiterate and try to save my credibility a little bit and just be like, I'm not trying to force that thing into a portal. Just so you guys know, I'm not really thinking that that shimmer must have killed our battery. But in after I got out, I was definitely kind of just like, was that part of this? And you'll find out here in a little bit, too, as the story goes on. So, having found no evidence that we need to get out immediately, just being a little bit uncomfortable with this new situation that we're in, we're going up to the next level. And this would be floor 7, according to my accounts. We go up to floor 7, wide open floor plan like every other floor. We walk out onto it. We're going to look out the windows and stuff. And as we're sort of walking to the middle of the floor to go across, just on the way to the middle of the floor, there's this footprint on the floor. And if you'll remember me saying before, the whole floor is sort of like covered with a thin layer of dust because people aren't up here all the time and people aren't like mopping the floors and stuff. Like, there's a thin layer of dust. And this footprint is a large boot and it's wet. Like, it's bigger than both my brother and my foot. And not combined, but like he wears like a size 10 or something, and I'm like a size 9.5. So like this foot is bigger than that. And we are kind of, this is where we kind of get scared. And I touch the footprint. It is wet. It's not like some stain on the floor, like if somebody stepped in like wood stain or something and then stepped there. It's not like that. But equally as concerning as there being one single wet footprint is there's no footprints coming up to it or going away from it. It's just that one footprint. And it's neither of ours, and we haven't been to this level yet. So whoever put it there is probably still in this building, and they're one step ahead of us. They're up, right? They're upstairs somewhere, because when we were on the lower floor, they were on the upper floor. That's kind of, you know, I'm getting goosebumps right now just telling this story. That's when we really start being like, we got to get out. Like, this is, we're not going to get to the roof. This is the end of the road. Like, this is, at this point, there's too many weird things going on. And, you know, I'd rather at this point just like go down and go to Chili's or something. Like, this is just the end of this adventure. It was fun for what it's worth. Let's get out of here. So we turn around. We go back to the staircase. We're getting ready to head down. Remember in the beginning of this story when I told you there's many layers of this story. And there's some stuff that I just cannot explain and I'm just here to relay the story to you. We start to go down. It's only a few floors, right? But we're not recognizing anything that we're seeing. When we're peeking our heads out onto the floors that we, in theory, had already been to, we're not seeing things that we would have seen, that we had already seen. We're not seeing the machine, the big wooden pinball machine. We're not seeing the red chair. And we keep going down. We go down like three or four floors to the point where you would think we would start to be getting to the darker levels, but we're not. And at this point, I'm starting to feel like we must have gotten turned around somehow. And I don't know if when we got scared of the footprint, there was another staircase maybe that we hadn't noticed before that we somehow took instead of the staircase that we originally used. I cannot explain this part, and I'm sorry. I wish I could. I wish there was some kind of like just extremely linear explanation that I could give to you for what happened. But without losing my mind over trying to put it all together, we were going down to where we had supposedly already been, and we weren't recognizing anything. We were scared. Our devices were dying. We had limited amount of battery in our phones, which we were going to need. So we decided in that moment, instead, we're just going to run to the top, and we're going to get on the roof, out in the open, and we're going to climb down this fire escape ladder that we had noticed on our little reconnaissance mission around the building when we were looking for no trespassing signs and cameras and stuff. We had noticed that there was a fire escape going down one side of the building. It was just a ladder, like one of those ladders with the cage around it. And the reason we hadn't used it to ascend in the first place from the ground level was because the ladder was kind of broken off, like 10 or 12 feet from the ground. And so we couldn't get up it. And we wouldn't have wanted to anyway. I didn't want to climb up that. But if we're in a situation where we may be being stalked or there may be somebody else in here, because it was kind of like if somebody is in here right now, they know we are in here because they're just one floor above us leaving wet footprints, which means it's fresh. Why, like, it's late summer. Why is this footprint here? Like, it must have just been put here. So we felt like this was a game of cat and mouse, and there was somebody in the building messing with us. So we are going to go to the extreme. You know, I'm prior military, and I took a great amount of, I had a lot of training in map reading and the art of not getting lost. And if you do get lost, finding your way out of whatever situation you're in. And I figured in this rash moment, could have just as easily gone down. But what did we do? Since we weren't recognizing anything, we're going to run to the top. We're going to find that extreme. And we're going to descend outside on the fire escape. So after going down a few levels, we start running up the stairs. It's such a weird decision to make, looking back. But we run up the stairs. We're peeking in once in a while to look at the floor, because again, we're looking for landmarks, we're looking for things to recognize, we're looking for people, we're looking for literally anything just to sort of get our bearings. We're scared though, so we are going, we're moving with a gusto to the top of the staircase, and you know, Long story short, we make it. Nothing eventful happens as we're ascending until we get to the very top and we find that door that's going to bring us out onto the roof. This door, besides the ceiling fan, is kind of the first time we see something that looks like it was intentionally replaced or put there, installed on the building. And it is a metal door with a push mechanism. So you would push on the door to disengage the latch and open the door. And above the door, sort of like on the other wall right next to the door, is a tiny little shelf. And on the shelf is a router. And like a Wi-Fi router. And it has green lights. And this thing is fired up, baby. It's blinking. It's transmitting or receiving signals. It is working. It's functioning. Now we're super creeped out. Because now we're like, this is a game. Somebody's messing with us. This is like some kind of like Saw thing or something like that. Like we are in somebody's little man-made... what's that movie, Green Room or whatever? We're in a game right now. And somebody's observing us at all times. They know, like, there's who knows how many little hidden cameras or trip mechanisms or lasers or whatever are in this building, sort of tracking our movement and transmitting. And I say that part because when we were getting ready to push the door open, we noticed that there's a wire going from the push mechanism to the wall. Having a background in security as well, I know how this thing works. And I don't think it's a booby trap. We have no idea. But I knew that something was going to happen when we opened the door because of that wire. I knew there was some kind of signal that was going to be transmitted. And it was most likely going to alert somebody in another location that the roof door of this building has been activated and opened. And that would trigger a response of some sort, I assume. Probably the cops coming, but maybe just them coming to see whoever them is, to see who's messing around in their building. Worst case scenario, that signal would be sent to somebody who is literally currently in the building with us. And then they can stalk us up this extremely narrow staircase where there's nowhere to go and engage with us somehow. That is why I sometimes think of this story as a serial killer story, like a modern serial killer story where that aspect is in conjunction with some of the supernatural, unexplainable parts of the story. I wonder if this building was an experiment of some type, and we just happened to be the unlucky ones who were part of it, unbeknownst to ourselves, unbeknownst to us. So, having our plan A completely ruined, we now figure that we should do what we had done all along and go to the lowest extreme. And what we're going to end up doing is we're just going to run to the bottom of the stairs. I feel like we should have done this in the first place. I fully admit that we should have done that in the first place. I have no idea why we didn't. The only thing I can think is that we just weren't thinking rationally in our fear and our confusion. You know, like, we've been all over the place. We've never, ever been lost. We've been deep in wildernesses all over the world. We've been in the Amazon, for goodness sake. We've never been lost. Until this moment, in this building, in the middle of Milwaukee. So before we try to descend, Well, we go down a couple levels, essentially. And, you know, we're kind of running, we're jogging, we're skipping two or three steps at a time. We're looking in the levels, you know, whatever. We're not seeing anything. And I look out of a window down because I want to see if there's anybody walking around. Because if there's somebody walking around on the street below us, I'm going to yell for help. Like, I'm just going to be like, hey, can you find the exit so that, like, sort of point us in the direction of where we need to go, at least? Like, I'm thinking anything. Maybe they can call the fire department or the cops or something. Because at this point, I'm like, dude, I want to get out. And if I'm going to die in here, I at least want to have told somebody that I'm stuck. And when I look out the window, there is this confusing moment where the building that I thought I was in was looking back at me. There shouldn't have been another building right outside the window I looked out of. It should have looked right down on that four-way intersection that I mentioned in the beginning of this story. But instead, what I see is the building that I thought I was in looking right back at me. And this is one of those moments that has sort of helped me develop this theory of dimensional bleeds, which I will talk about a little bit later. But the way that I explain this, and, you know, my brother saw this too, and he was actually the first one to sort of just be like, isn't that the building we came in? You know, he was the one who was just like, what the heck is going on? That's the building that we thought we were in. So the dimensional bleed idea is that two dimensions become the same one for a small area. And it could be a bigger area, too. This is a huge, long theory. We're not going to go down the rabbit hole. I might make a whole nother video about it. But the idea is that two dimensions sort of combine. If this is one and this is one, the place where they intersect is the dimensional bleed. And it's where one dimension bleeds into another. And reality is distorted. I'm not a scientist. I don't know anything about that. But this is the moment that helped me sort of put that idea together and develop many more ideas on that wavelength. And to this day, I don't know what actually happened. But that is what I saw. I'm telling you now. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, guys. So, as I said previously, we are now trying to find the second extreme, which is the bottom of the staircase. We reached the top. We were not able to escape out of the top. So now we're going to reach the bottom. Looking out the window and seeing the building that we thought we were in was alarming and horrifying and the icing on the cake. We just had to get out of there. So now we're running down the stairs. And we're trying to stay close to the interior wall of the stairwell, because as we're running and corkscrewing down, we know that because this stairwell is so narrow, at any given time, somebody could just reach their hand in from one of the doorways leading to the floors and grab us. So we're trying to stay close to the wall and descend as quickly as possible. Our heavy DSLRs, we're thinking we may need to use as weapons. And we've noticed that time seems to be moving very, very quickly. Somewhere near the top of the staircase, it became very clear that we had been in this building for 3 hours or so. You know, rough numbers, about 3 hours we had been up in here. It was 3:30-ish in that ballpark. These things get hazy as I try to remember and tell the story. But we didn't think anything of that because a lot had happened and our brains were spinning and everything was just crazy. But we knew that we did not want to be in this building when darkness fell. We were not sleeping in this building. We were not going to get trapped in here at nighttime. If this whole building was pitch black, I have no idea if we would have ever found our way out. If there were boards on every window, I have zero doubts that we would not make it out of that building. With everything else that was happening, we just knew we had to get out of there before darkness fell. We're running down the staircase. Every now and then, we're peeking our head through one of the doorways to see if there's anything we recognize on the floor. Anything at all. We're running. And finally, AJ, my brother, peeks his head in one of the doorways and we see the fan. He sees the fan, the ceiling fan that was spinning. It's still spinning. And now we know we're getting out of here, baby. We're getting out. We keep going down. We're going to the bottom. We know that the bottom is level one, and we'll be able to find our way through those office sort of rooms to the loading dock. We'll see the door open. We'll see the light underneath from the outside world. We'll slide through. We'll get out of here, and we'll be home free. We're running down the stairs as fast as we can. At this point, we're like, okay, we don't even need to look in any of the other floors because we are on the right trail. We saw the ceiling fan room. We're good. That's like maybe floor five, so we're on the right track. Remember how I told you in the beginning of this story that there was no basement? Like when we got to the floor, the staircase, floor one was it. There was no way to go down. This is one of the last parts of this story that I can't explain. Because when we get to the bottom of this staircase, the floor is different. It's like gravel, almost. It's very dirty, and it's very, very dark. And it's not the same first floor that we remembered. And over against the far wall, like, the building's a square, so not like the opposite wall, but the other wall. There is a single doorway, I guess. Like there's the whole wall, and then somewhere in like the middle of the wall is a doorway. And the doorway is illuminated, which means that there's a light on the other side of the doorway. From where we are, there must be an interior wall. There's a door in the interior wall there's a doorway with no door, and on the other side of that interior wall, a light is on. Over the doorway, sort of covering the entrance, there's plastic hanging down, like plastic sheeting that you could just brush aside, like in a butcher shop or something like that. Or if you're painting, you know, like something like that. I have no idea what possessed us to do this. I don't know if it's because we thought maybe we were on the right level and this was a way out, or if we were just so prepared to find somebody to help us out of here at this point. We didn't care if we were supposed to be in here or not. I don't know if at this point in our minds we were thinking, let's solve this mystery and see if there's a big computer set up or something down there. I'm not sure what possessed us to do it. I cannot explain it. We go to the doorway. We go to the illuminated doorway. And we walk through. We push the plastic aside and we peek our heads in. We don't put our whole body in. We just sort of peek in. We don't see anybody. But there's a giant hole in the ground. And like, remember, the floor is kind of concrete, but there's like a lot of debris on it and stuff. And the concrete, this hole had been, like, this hole is like kind of under the concrete, I guess. And it's deep. Like, it's like, it's a big hole. Like, if I was to stand in it, it would probably go somewhere between, like, it would probably go up to, like, my chest, maybe. Like, somewhere between my waist and my chest. I believe that's how deep it was. I didn't stand in it, so I'm not exactly sure. But when I'm thinking about it now, and, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly. As I'm continuing to tell these stories, things are slowly coming back to me. But it was like somewhere between maybe a little above my stomach, my waist, and my chest. And next to the hole is a wheelbarrow filled with dirt and rock and concrete and a shovel. So somebody had dug this hole by hand. And there were no wires coming out of the hole. There was no plumbing. There was nothing apparently in this hole. And I remember thinking that that was very strange. It's almost as if there really was something buried here, and whoever had been digging here got it out, got what they came for, and left the hole there. And the light above this doorway that was illuminating this whole little area was just this green light. And I have a photo of it somewhere, but I don't know exactly where it is. I'm going to try to find it. But AJ and I sort of enter this little room, and we're standing like under the light, because these past few floors have been really dark. So we have minimal flashlight left, and we are just sort of standing under this light, looking around, trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And then, just like that, as we're standing under this light, it clicks off. Pitch blackness in an instant. Our hearts dropped. It became so pitch black down here. We could, in such a quick amount of time, in a second, our only reaction was to quickly turn on our phones so we could get like the screen illumination. We're running out of battery. We flick on our flashlights and we sort of scan them, because the room is so huge and so dark down there. We exit out the doorway and we sort of follow the wall. We shine our flashlights on the wall, and we follow the wall back to the staircase until we find the dark staircase. And we find it and we go up. And that first level, we know that this has to be level one. It has to be. If we were just in the basement, this level has to be level one. And sure enough, my brother, he goes through some of these back rooms and he finds the loading dock. And I just hear him yell to me as I'm scanning around other rooms. I hear him yell to me, "I found it. I found the way out." I run over to where his voice is. And sure enough, there it is. We have this narrow window of light under this garage door thing. We slide under. We kick the fire extinguisher out from under the door. We slam the thing shut. We don't even look back because the feeling of being watched is so strong right now. We don't want to look back at the building and see somebody up in one of those windows looking down on us. We just simply follow the alleyway between the two buildings and we walk away and we leave that place. And we walk a good quarter mile or half mile or so to where we had parked the vehicle, and we get in the car and we go to a gas station to get some drinks because we're absolutely parched. And for the first time we look at our phones and another three and a half-ish hours have passed, and it is now in the ballpark of 6:30, and where all that time went, I can't explain. It's one of the mysteries of this story that I just simply, I can't explain it. And the feeling that we had, even as we drove away, even as we were at this gas station miles away, was just that of being watched. And it felt very wrong. It felt bad. You know, and when I look back on the story and I think of logical explanations, I think of government experiments. More than anything else, I think it was this some location that was being used for some kind of experiment. Some sort of black project, some dark, you know, I have no idea. And I just know that it was very bad. It wasn't a good thing. Whatever was happening probably wasn't a good thing. I think about the hole in the basement and wonder, you know, it's Wisconsin. A lot of Wisconsin is built on Indian burial grounds and stuff like that. I think, was there something in the basement that they had to dig up relating to the past? Or that they chose to dig up for malicious reasons? Why was that hole in the ground? It makes no sense. How did we get to the basement? There was no basement when we ascended. Why is there a basement now? Why did we look out the window of this building and see the building that we were in instead of see a different building or see the horizon or the road below? Why did we see the building that we were in? Why did we get lost in the first place? Who left the wet footprint? This theory on my dimensional bleed theory has to do with two dimensions combining and altering reality. And I believe that it's one thing that the forces of evil are attempting to do prematurely. I believe that when if you're not a Christian, I'm sorry, this is going to sound strange for you, and you can think about this story in your own way. This is the way that I, as a Christian, describe it and think about it. But I believe that in the end times, when evil is conquered, dimensions will sort of become a moot thing, and essentially heaven is all around us, but we can't experience it in our human bodies. But it is one of the things we will be awakened to, and therefore it probably won't feel like there's many dimensions, or like it will feel more like you can be in all at the same time. A beautiful dimensional bleed, that they're all combined, and this world that you're in now is just filled with mysteries and things that previously you hadn't been able to witness and experience. And I think one thing that the forces of evil are doing, Satan and his legions, I think they attempt to sometimes cause these dimensional bleeds to force them to happen so that they can send evil through, evil from the other dimensions, and sort of create chaos and madness in the world in places on a grander scale than just like if you imagine a portal as a gateway or a doorway. A dimensional bleed would be something more like like a property line, essentially. Like, it's just so much bigger. You can walk from your property or to your neighbor's property through this dimensional bleed. It's like, I'm sorry, that's a terrible way to try to describe it, but a dimensional bleed is a location more than just a doorway. It's an area of space. And things can come and go freely. And that's... I don't know. I don't know, guys. Listen. We don't know what's going on out there, but it's something big. And it's... we've only just begun to experience it. And it is not going to be long before we are thrust into this world we do not understand. And I think part of that will be dimensions combining. And there are places in the world where that does appear to happen already on a regular basis. There's all of these locations all over the world, like even like the Bermuda Triangle, for instance, where it seems that things are happening on a regular basis, and I think those could be locations where the bleed is very active. And I think it can be opened and closed sometimes. I think it can be repaired and broken. I think it's very much a thing. It's like a hole in the ozone layer. It's just, it's an unexplainable location where strange things happen regularly. And I feel like this building may be one such location, or at least the location of this building is one of those areas. But, I mean, who knows? It's so difficult to try to explain it, because it is unexplainable. But, you've heard my story. If you guys have any ideas or experiences that are similar, you should comment and tell me about it, or send me an email at 21cdstudios@gmail.com. 21cdstudios@gmail.com. I'd be really interested to hear your stories relating to dimensional stuff and portals, and see if you guys can contribute to my theory, and, you know, we can all sort of build this thing together. And the messed up part is, even once we have the answer, we're not going to know what to do with it. Even if we find the answer, we're not going to know what to do with it. We're powerless. We're just humans. We're just some people. But I go back to my statement, very soon stuff is going to be happening all around us that we cannot explain. Anyway, guys, listen, I hope that you got something out of this story. I'm sorry it was a little tricky to tell, and I'm sure I left out some details that I'll think of at other times. If you want to discuss this stuff with me, again, shoot me an email or something, leave a comment, and I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. If you want to hear me talk more about this topic, I did discuss it with Tony Merkel on his Members Only portion of the episode that we did together. So definitely run over there and check it out. I hope that you guys, I hope that you guys understand that I just can't explain a bunch of those things, though. I really hope you guys kind of see that this stuff is unexplainable sometimes. And of all my experiences that I've had, you know, I've had 5 or 6 big ones in my life, and this was the one that I truly am most alarmed by, because I just have no rational explanation. And that's just fine. All right, guys. Don't forget to follow and find me on all your favorite podcast platforms. If you're listening to this somewhere, just remember that there is a video for this, and you can find it on YouTube, 21CD Podcast. Don't drink the water and question everything.